God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thank you, Brother Hutchings. Again today, Brother Hutchings will bring you a commentary on Daniel. He'll be in the second chapter of the book, which he says is the most important prophetic chapter in the Bible. Just like yesterday, Southwest Radio's Vice President Dr. Kenneth Hill will be reading the chapter, and then I'll ask Brother Hutchings about the events described. Now, chapter 2 is a long chapter, and the reading of it takes a few minutes, so Brother Hutchings will zero in on the most important portions of the chapter. He covers it in much greater detail in the book, which you'll have an opportunity to get today. Brother Hutchings, let's listen now as Dr. Hill reads the scriptures from Daniel 2.
And in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams, wherewith his spirit was troubled, and his sleep brake from him. Then the king commanded to call the magicians, and the astrologers, and the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans, for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, The thing is gone from me. If ye will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, ye shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered again and said, Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation of it. The king answered and said, I know of certainty that ye would gain the time, because ye see the thing is gone from me. But if ye will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you, for ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me, till the time be changed. Therefore tell me the dream, and I shall know that ye can show me the interpretation thereof. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, There is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such things of any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. And it is a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. For this cause the king was angry and very furious, and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, Why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. Then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time, and that he would show the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise, and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee. For thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. Therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, Destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste, and said thus unto him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, "Art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen, and the interpretation thereof?" Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, "The secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter, and he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, the secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art his head of gold. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, forasmuch as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it brake in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure." Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel, and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, "Of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods, and a Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret." Then the king made Daniel a great man, and gave him many great gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and the chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king.
That was Dr. Kenneth Hill reading chapter 2 of the book of Daniel. Brother Hutchings, now, in the dream that Daniel interpreted for the king, what does the image or this tremendous idol represent?
Thank you, Brother Jerry. Of course, we appreciate Dr. Hill, who is Vice President of Southwest Radio Ministries, reading the scriptures, and that saves us time by having to go back and reference the scriptures as we go along. Now, the huge image, which we know from the next chapter, chapter 3, was 66 cubits high and 6 cubits wide, the same size as our Statue of Liberty on Ellis Island, just across from Babylon, New York on Long Island. Now, the image had a prophetic meaning, as Daniel told the kings, that it would concern not only his empire, but succeeding empires. The image represented the times of the Gentiles, or the times in which Jerusalem would be trodden down of the Gentiles. And even though the Jews did return from Babylon and rebuild the temple, the city was not completely free of Gentile presence. Even today, the Temple Mount is still under the control of Islamic authority.
Now, the image from the head to the toes was composed of different metals. The head was of gold. So what did the head of gold represent?
We do not have to guess what the head of gold represented, because we read that Daniel looked at the king and pointed to the head on the image and said, "Thou art this head of gold." The head of gold represented the Babylonian Empire, which reached from India to Egypt.
And in the next section of the image, it was made of a different metal, silver. This section was the arms and the breast. What did this part represent?
Again, we do not have to guess what this part of the image represented either. In 538 B.C., when the armies of Babylon were out in the province trying to keep the empire together, two next-door neighbors, Media and Persia, and their armies surrounded the city, diverted the Euphrates River that flowed under the gates on either side of the city. The army of these two nations took the city in one night. This was a two-part empire that took over. Darius the Mede ruled the new empire first, and then Cyrus of Persia ruled it after Darius. So this part of the prophecy came to pass just as Daniel interpreted the dream.
Babylon, Media, and Persia. Identify those nations for our listeners as they exist today, Brother Hutchings.
They are easily identified. Babylon is, of course, Iraq as it exists today. Media is Afghanistan, and Persia is Iran. The same three nations that are causing our own nation so much bloodshed, terrorism, and trouble today.
The next section of the image was the belly and thighs of brass. What empire does this section represent?
The Persian Empire that existed in two parts held together until 333 B.C., a period of about 235 years. But during this time, there was continual wars with Greece. Finally, in 333 B.C., young King Alexander of Greece crossed over into what is now the Istanbul area of Turkey. And though his army was smaller than that of Persia, it was well trained in a new battlefield tactic called the phalanx. Alexander destroyed the million-man Persian army. Then Alexander conquered all the territory from Libya to the Indus River in India. Now, Alexander died in 320 B.C. in Babylon, and as prophesied in chapter 8, his empire was divided into four parts, and it existed as a four-part empire until 170 A.D., and it lasted about 150 years.
As we move down the image, the next part is in the king's dream, were the legs of iron. What world empire did the legs represent?
The legs of iron on the image represented the fourth Gentile world empire after Greece, and this empire was Rome. Now, the Italian peninsula was mountainous and volcanic, somewhat of a hostile environment until about 1000 B.C. But gradually, several different tribes of people began to move in and settle along coastal areas. The Etruscans were the main ones, and then came the Sabines, the Latins, and others. In 488 B.C., after an alliance of the smaller tribes overthrew the Etruscans, they came together and formed a republican central government, a Senate, and this was located at Rome. The Senate appointed a leader, and they called him a Caesar. There was warfare, though, between Rome and Carthage across the Mediterranean Sea until about 170 B.C., and this took most of Rome's attention and delayed them in expanding. But after Carthage was destroyed and finally defeated, of course, this gave Rome the opportunity to move into the Middle East and expand northward into Europe, all the way from India to what is now England. Now, the new empire, though, became divided into two parts, just as the legs on the image represented: Rome in the west and the Byzantine Empire in the east. It was known as the Iron Empire, though, Roman Iron Law. And the weapons of the Roman soldiers, at least their chief weapon, was a small iron sword for close fighting, and this identified the Roman Empire.
Brother Hutchings, we note that in verse 40 that the iron legs on the image were to break in pieces and bruise. How did this happen?
In about 475 A.D., the Roman Empire did indeed begin to break up, and smaller empires arose out of the pieces. The British Empire, the French Empire, the German Empire, the Portuguese Empire, Holland, Belgium, and the Italian empires. Now, all of these separate empires, though, began fighting for world domination between themselves, or getting pieces of the world. Now, World War I and World War II were the result of fightings between these European powers or empires.
Now, we notice in Daniel's description of the Iron Empire that these iron pieces in the extremity of the age were broken up into smaller pieces in the feet and mixed with clay. How did that happen?
Towards the end of World War II, Roosevelt and Stalin ganged up on Churchill and told him that the European colonial system was over and they had to give up their colonies. Now, Churchill protested that England had not fought this war to see the dissolution of the British Empire. But he had no other option, as he was confronted with two of the world's new superpowers in the United States and Russia. So then the United Nations was formed in 1945, and the European powers then allowed their colonies to become independent nations, or we might say smaller pieces of iron. In 1940, there were still about 70 nations in the world. But after World War II, they began to rise in number, and now there are over 200 nations in the world. And these came mainly out of the breakup, or further breakup, of the old Roman Empire. Now, Jesus said, "Behold the fig tree," and we know the fig tree represents Israel. So when the fig tree buds, he said, "Watch for the fig tree budding as signs of its coming." Now, this happened in 1948. But in Luke, we read that Jesus said, "Behold the fig trees and all the trees when they bud." So all the trees budded after Israel became a nation.
Brother Hutchings, we noticed that the last part of the image is the toes, and these are referenced as kings. What do the toes on the image represent?
As we go from the head to the toes on the image, we are passing in time. That is the times of the Gentiles. We are still in the time of the fourth empire, or Rome, in its broken condition. Now, the toes evidently represent kings, and there will be a revived Roman Empire. And we see this Roman Empire in the stages of development today. Now, in 1955 or 1956, an initial alliance of European nations came together as the common market. The European nations had lost their colonies, and so for the common good as far as products were concerned, and strength, they came together for economic reasons. But the common market grew into the European Union, a political entity. Headlines of European newspapers read, "Back together again." Now, when were they ever together? Well, they were together in the Roman Empire, so they were back together again. According to Daniel 9, Revelation 13, 17, and 18, this revived Roman Empire will produce a world leader, the Antichrist, after the order of Nebuchadnezzar. What we see happening in Europe and the Middle East is preparing the way for this to happen.
At the conclusion of chapter 2 and Daniel's interpretation of the king's dream, a huge rock from heaven strikes the image, destroys it, and the rock then fills the whole earth.
That is, of course, the rock that the prophets foretold and the rock that Peter said would smash all who opposed it. The rock is, of course, the Lord Jesus Christ. As we read in Revelation 19, Jesus will return with the armies of heaven, destroy the Antichrist and his armies from the revived Roman Empire, and rule the nations with a rod of iron for 1,000 years. He will bring in the kingdom of heaven. The preterists are wrong. The church or man is not going to bring in the kingdom. Only Jesus Christ, at his second coming, will be able to do that. And the idea that all the churches are going to unite and then add the Muslims, the Buddhists, the Hindus, and the others, and eliminate all the world's problems is a wonderful delusion. But it is a delusion. It's not going to happen. Jesus is the blessed hope, and without his coming, this world would be no hope. But, Brother Jerry, this is the most remarkable prophecy in the Bible. There's no other book in the world that foretells the future before it happens but the Bible.
That's a fact that can't be refuted, Brother Hutchings, and it's a fact that your commentary on the book of Daniel is among the very best available today. Folks, even if you have the earlier edition, you'll want the newly updated Daniel the Prophet. Brother Hutchings has added world events that bring the prophecies found in the book of Daniel into even clearer perspective. Get one copy of the 336-page book for a gift of $15. We expect many of you will want more than one, and you can get three copies when you send a $40 gift and ask for them. But there's more. During this series only, we're also offering Brother Hutchings' commentary on the book of Revelation entitled Revelation for Today, for a gift of $15. That's below the gift amount we've been offering it for in the past. And here's an even better idea. Get one copy of Daniel the Prophet and one copy of Revelation for Today at the same time in appreciation of your $25 gift to this ministry. Call 1-800-652-1144. That number again is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008, or go online. The web address is swrc.com. When we finish this series, there will be 12 programs, one on each chapter of Daniel. Get all of them on tapes or CDs for a gift of $30. In his commentary, Brother Hutchings shares some interesting insights you may never have considered from Daniel. Stay tuned for a Bible in the News report over most of these stations. Be here Monday when we continue this series on your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. It's time for Southwest Radio Ministries' Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program. I'm Jerry Giltner. I'll be bringing you today's report. A revised European Union treaty likely will turn out to be a godless document. At least that's the fear expressed by German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who currently serves as president of the European Council. Ms. Merkel is dead set on getting a treaty pushed through in the near future, but recent events seem to preclude the possibility of God appearing in it. We're quoting now from euobserver.com, this story posted on the Internet May 15, 2007. Quote, German Chancellor and Christian Democrat Angela Merkel has voiced regret there will be no reference to Christian roots in the revised EU treaty amid controversial remarks about damaged churches in Turkish Cyprus at a meeting of religious VIPs in Brussels. You know what my personal view is? I would have liked the Constitution to deliver such a reference. But as President of the European Council, I see there is not much of a chance, she said on the prospects of God appearing in a preamble to the EU text. I can't hold out any hope, she added. Her statement comes in the context of Germany's push to fix the broad outlines of a new EU treaty, still called a constitution by some, in late June, following months of bilateral consultations with EU states after the rejection of the original EU constitution in 2005. The God debate is at least as old as the 2002 EU convention that wrote the original constitution, with Roman Catholic states like Poland and the Vatican pushing for the reference, but with France and the UK worried over national secularist traditions or damaging relations with Islamic EU candidate Turkey. The EU's 50th birthday declaration in March rejuvenated the discussion, but in the end, the birthday text made no reference to Christianity while praising identities and diverse traditions of member states and how the EU is enriched by a variety of languages, cultures. When the German Chancellor, European Commission President José Manuel Barroso, and European Parliament President Hans-Gert Pottering met Christian, Jewish, and Muslim leaders at the EU capital on Tuesday, 15th of May, they stuck to safe ground on universal EU values such as human dignity. Close quotes. If, as many believe, the EU becomes the base for the Antichrist regime during the tribulation, a godless treaty will be to his liking. After all, the Bible says that he demands allegiance to himself and not to Christ. We read, quote, "And he shall magnify himself in his heart. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes." Close quotes. That's from Daniel chapter 8, verse 25. Many believe this description goes beyond Antiochus and is a type of the Antichrist who opposes Christ in the tribulation. That's today's Bible in the News report. To get a copy of the monthly Bible in the News question and answer publication, call 800-652-1144. Write to Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008, or visit the website at swrc.com. Please include a gift of $3 to cover shipping and handling. Join us for the next Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report or question and answer over this radio station.